This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. It's our full hour each month where we talk everything gardening, landscaping, forestry, pests, and more. So what's working for you? What's not? Our experts are here to take your phone calls, emails, and social media questions. Call 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you know how to find us on Facebook and Twitter. We'll look for you there as well. We're joined on the phone today by Campbell County Extension Office Agent Sarah Stoles. Welcome back, Sarah.
Hey.
Hey. And we also have with us Boone County Extension Office Agent David Kester. David, it's been a while. Welcome back.
Yes, thank you.
And again, that number is 513-419-7100. We want to hear from you, your questions and your comments about gardening, what issues you're facing, what successes you're seeing, something plaguing you. But we want to start with a bit of a mystery. So I'm going to ask you both to take your extension agent hats off and put your detective caps on, because we're seeing some pretty strange warnings from agriculture officials at the federal and the state level. Kentucky Agriculture Commissioner Ryan Carles said that anyone in the Commonwealth who's receiving these packages of foreign or unfamiliar seeds should contact his office immediately. He says, quote, "At this point in time, we don't have enough information to know if this is a hoax, a prank, an internet scam, or an act of agricultural bioterrorism." He goes on to say unsolicited seeds could be invasive and introduce unknown diseases to local plants, harm livestock, or threaten our environment. Sarah, what are you hearing in Campbell County about this issue?
Well, I haven't received a personal phone call yet, though we have publicized this on all of our websites, social media outlets. And there's been a lot of views and shares on that. And I can't emphasize enough, you know, call our office or Department of Agriculture, and we'll be glad to get you the information on how to process that and shipping that off to get tested.
David, are we hearing anything on the Boone County side?
No, I really haven't gotten any calls about it. But, of course, I see all the posts, and It's really a something to be concerned about, because an awful lot of our pests that become invasive arrive this way through mail order or things like that. And the states and the federal government really does put quarantines on these things, and they're to be adhered to. And it's just something to be, I think, very concerned about, because we just don't need any more introduced species that can wreak havoc in our environment.
And we don't know exactly what these seeds produce, apparently. So, David, how big of a deal is it if someone plants something unknown to our local area?
Well, it's just that because we don't know what it is, and these seeds, they probably have not been certified in any way at all, so they could be carrying insects and diseases with them. And that could be an introduced species very similar to the virus that we're going through right now. Can really, it has no enemies, and it can really run amok. And so you want to be very careful with that. And then also just the fact that, you know, the multiflora rose and the amur honeysuckle were all introduced species, and we thought they would just be fine in our environment. And now farmers and landowners are fighting these things, and they're really invasive. And, you know, literally millions of dollars are spent eradicating them each year.
If you've received these packages of mystery seeds and want to tell us a little bit about it, give us a call, 513-419-7100. That's also the number to call with any of your general gardening, landscaping, tree, pesticide questions. What should you be doing with your garden right now in August? And Sarah, as we find ourselves just a couple of days away from August, we also find ourselves towards the end of summer. My favorite thing about August is that it does put us a little bit closer to autumn. And so let's talk a little bit about what we should be doing right now. I understand one thing that maybe we should consider is dividing our perennial flowers, that August is one of the best times to dig and divide perennial flowers. Of course, I don't know what that means, but hopefully you can explain.
Do you still have your money plant, Michael?
My money tree is hanging on by a thread.
Okay. Well, you know, this time of year, we definitely need to hydrate ourselves, you know, and our plants. But also, yes, autumn's right around the corner. So if you haven't done so already, thinking about what you would like to plant in your fall garden. And David, I know this is your favorite time of year too with the vegetables. So, you know, our root crops do well this time, you know, in the fall. The carrots are sweeter, you know, broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, all your greens, kale, you know, all that can be grown. So you can, of course, we have our wonderful UK publication that gives you a timeline of when to start these. And some things don't need to be started and transplanted. You can actually directly sow those into the garden. So if you need help, of course, reach out to us. But yeah, cooler temperatures are slowly approaching us, and gardening season can continue.
And David, it's also just about mum's season, right? So when are you supposed to plant those? Can they be planted now, or should they have been planted earlier?
No, well, if you've overwintered them and you're growing them, you've had to prune them back throughout the summer. And about now, you're going to quit pruning them and let them go ahead and form buds, flower buds. But of course, this time of year, just about every garden center and nursery around is going to be getting their fall mums in the next month or so. And I just think those are a beautiful plant for the fall. And our nurseries and garden centers need the business. So I would go out and select some of those gorgeous fall colors.
When do we get to talk about pumpkins, Sarah?
Oh, well, we could, talk about the seeds. If you want to grow them, they should already be planted.
Yeah.
What
do they look like status-wise at this point, if you're a smart person who already knew that and put them in the ground already?
Okay, so they should be emerging through the soil at this time, and they should have maybe definitely a first set of leaves, and they shouldn't be too big at this moment. Making sure a good thing about pumpkins and a lot of our vine crops like watermelon as well is they need well-drained soil. So just keep that in mind. You can grow them in raised beds. We do that. We have done that at the extension office in our education gardens, though, trellising can be a little bit making sure that no one's stepping on them in an education garden. So we tend to grow smaller pumpkins in our garden. But gourds as well. Don't forget about the gourds. I love gourds. It's a good time to grow them as well. Your ornamental gourds and edible gourds as well. So good time of year. And then usually they're about 90 days to maturity. So that will bring us right into the fall.
Oh, I'm ready for the fall. And we want to hear what's going on in your neck of the woods. So give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. We've got some emails now. One from Janelle, who writes, I've purchased a couple different potted bushes that were displayed in full sun at the store, but after only a week on my back deck, they start to die. I water appropriately and miss the greenery in the evenings, but they seem to just dry out and die. What am I doing wrong? David, can you help Janelle?
Well, I would go back to where you bought them and find out exactly where they're supposed to go. Every nursery or garden center is going to arrange some things by their front door that may look good there, but don't necessarily, that isn't where they need to be put in a landscape. And I would find out what type of shrub it is and do a little bit of research on it and find out it sounds like she didn't plant these in the ground and that she still has them in the pot. And maybe the pot is just, she's not watering enough to keep that pot moist enough. But there's a lot of questions there that need to be answered.
Well, she says she waters appropriately and missed the greenery, but I guess we don't necessarily know what that definition of appropriately is. Sarah, any advice on what would be an appropriate amount to water different potted bushes?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times if they're in a nursery container, they're going to be black containers, or if she's trans, and also the soil is a nursery soil, which is, you know, going to dry out very quickly. So I would strongly recommend transplanting them into, you know, a decorative container with good potting soil. And then that's going to help keep the moisture in there. Now, again, depending upon, you know, is it the south side, the north side, whatever, you know, sun exposure is the type of plant, usually you're going to have to water, you know, I just 2 to 3 times a week. And sometimes you may have to water twice a day, again, depending upon the temperature. I always just put my fingers there in the soil and kind of feel around. And that's the best indicator that I have found to help me increase watering or decrease watering. And it's always important with any container gardening, make sure that you thoroughly water and make sure you focus just on that root zone. Really, watering, sprinkling the needles is not helping. In fact, a lot of times that can further aggravate, especially if there's a disease or insect pressure. So really just avoiding any foliar wetness and just focus on that root zone.
Janelle, I hope that advice helps you out. You can send your questions to talk@wvxu.org or join us on the phone at 513-419-7100. It's our monthly gardening show here on Cincinnati Edition. And from the Campbell County Extension Office, we're joined by Sarah Stoles. And from the Boone County Extension Office, we're joined by David Kester. They are standing by to answer your questions. We got an email from RC who writes, I have a 30-year-old perennial garden, and for the first time, I've had a garden-wide invasion of mealybugs. I first noticed the white cotton residue on daylilies after leaves were turning tan and shriveling up. Then I noticed them on my hosta collection, which is huge, and a few other perennials like Japanese anemones. I cut the daylilies back and discarded the foliage, but what is the best treatment to eradicate this pest and save my hosta and other perennials? I don't want to cut the hosta back because at this point, they won't fill in again. David?
There's several things, and she can, or he can, use an organic spray such as spinosad, or neem oil would be pretty effective against those as well. And of course, there's the conventional things such as malathion, which of course is a synthetic product. But any of those should take care of that. Mealybugs, really, it must be she got a really heavy concentration of them, because most of the times mealybugs are taken care of by predators. Predatory insects will come along and they'll feed on them and really keep their population under control.
All right. And I said RC, and that was the name and the email address, but it was signed by Rose. So Rose, I hope that advice helps you out. And it's a pretty name for the gardening show. Thank you for sending your question in. 513-419-7100 is the number to call if you want to join us on the phone. We have Jane on the line. Hi, Jane. What's your question or comment?
Hi there. We just moved into a new house and want to put in some raised beds, and we're wondering what we can still sow that we would be able to harvest vegetable-wise before the end of the season. So, like, I know peas and lettuces grow fast, but we're wondering what else we still have time for.
All right, Jane, we'll hang up and let our experts answer. Sarah, somebody who wants to put in raised beds and possibly harvest something this season.
All right. Well, there are some late variety tomato plants. Rutgers is a good late variety. You can probably find a few of those in the nursery still. You know, if you want to try any of the fall vine crops like the pumpkins or the gourds, you can try those as well. And if you have a shady spot, you know, dampled sunlight, yes, you can do any of your greens. And then, of course, here soon, you're going to be directly sowing or transplanting for the fall crop.
513-419-7100. Let's go to Tom now. Hi, Tom. What's your question or comment?
Yes, good afternoon. I have a bed that has a lot of asparagus in it, and I've let it go pretty much go to seed. And I want to transplant that to another bed. What is the best time to do that, and any other tips you might have about moving asparagus?
All right, Tom, we'll hang up and let our experts decide on that. David, Tom wants to move his asparagus into a new bed. What's the best timing and method?
I would do that in the spring of the year, usually March or so, and have your new bed ready for the asparagus that you're going to move. And I don't know whether you're going to move all of it or just some of it. But if it's a new bed, I would really enrich that with some organic matter and, you know, do it according to the directions, which, you know, you make a trench and then you put the roots in there, fill them back in slowly, and then water them throughout the next growing season. And of course, you won't be able to harvest anything off of those that coming year, but the following year you can begin to harvest.
Tom, I hope that was good advice that we got there from David Kester. 513-419-7100 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation. You can also email talk at wvxu.org or look us up on Facebook or Twitter. We got an email from Phil who says, "We have chiggers. I use 7-Dust concentrate that works for a few days, but then they come right back. Any suggestions?" Sarah, can we help Phil out with his chigger problem?
Yeah, so let's think not only just our chemical control methods, but also just looking around our landscape. So chiggers really like overgrown areas, and also so do ticks. So making sure that, you know, if it's in a wooded area, you know, cleaning up that environment to allow more light in there to dry out that area. So if you need to rely on chemical control, there are options out there, you know, and you may want to just, you know, focus in on those hot spots, if you will, in areas. There are products out there like that has the active ingredient by fenthrin. You can use carboxyl, which is the active ingredient in 7. There are permethrins as well that can be effective. So usually if you do that in early spring, apply that, that will be a good control for all year round. Now this time again, usually in June-ish, you could apply a second application, but this time of year, you might be, you know, they're very mature at this point. In fact, I think they only, David, you may correct me if I'm wrong, they may only go till August or so as the pest. So, so there are options out there, not just relying on chemical control. Of course, we have publication about that and also how you can protect yourself as you're outdoor, enjoying the outdoors.
Phil, I hope that advice helps you out with your chigger problem. You can email your questions or comments to talk at wvxu.org or join us live on this program by phone, 513-419-7100. Let's go now to Mona, who's on the phone line. Mona, hi. What's your question or comment?
Hi. I have a question about a butterfly bush that I am experiencing the leaves to be kind of yellow and mossy, and it's in a sunny place, and I don't know if I've overwatered it or not enough water. It's still flowering, but the leaves look horrible.
And it's a butterfly bush?
Yes.
All right, Mona, we will hang up and let our experts talk about this one. David, Mona's got a butterfly bush. The leaves are turning yellow, and she wants to know what she's done or what she can do.
Well, sometimes you will get some of the foliage on a butterfly bush. It will yellow and fall off. As long as there is still plenty of good foliage on it, I wouldn't be overly concerned. But it could be insect related. We do have some insects that will feed upon the butterfly bush, but usually they do not turn the foliage yellow first. So I would maybe consider taking a sample to your nearby extension office and seeing what they diagnose it as. And as far as water, we have had, it's been very spotty again this summer, but overall we're in pretty good shape, with precipitation. So I'm not sure that's the problem.
You're listening to Cincinnati Edition. It's our monthly gardening show. We've got Sarah Stoles from the Campbell County Extension Office and David Kester from the Boone County Extension Office. And Sarah, another question about butterflies that, I mean, I guess that's not technically related to butterfly bush. I don't know. Carolyn writes us an email who says, my flower garden usually has lots of butterflies, but not this year. The monarchs didn't even stop for the abundant milkweed on their way north. Bees, mosquitoes, and lightning bugs are here, but not butterflies. What happened this year? Sarah, please tell Carolyn and me that COVID hasn't taken the butterflies away from us.
Oh, Lord. Sorry. No, I was actually going to say we've seen quite a few monarchs, swallowtails. Of course, the bees are buzzing around and all the other good pollinators. Again, David, let me know. But usually if we've seen a decrease in population, we get an alert about that. But I have not seen anything come across. In our garden, we have seen, like I said, quite a few monarchs and the females. So we're able to tell which, you know, is it a male or female? And then we can go, once they lay on the milkweed, we'll look and we've been seeing eggs as well, which is a good sign. So, and we like to, you know, monitor the population in our garden. And the last 3 years, myself and Terry Turner, the hort technician in Campbell County, we tag them, and we get close to 200-plus monarchs that we tag each year in our garden that stop by for a treat in our garden. So far, we have not seen a decrease.
Okay, and David, Carolyn says she had abundant milkweed that the butterflies apparently just skipped over this season. Any perspective from you?
I think it's just probably a spotty situation. I've tried to think about, we did have some pretty frigid nights in back in May, but I really don't think that had anything to do with this. We are not getting any reports, and everybody else around is seeming having an abundance of butterflies, and we do out at the our nature center as well.
All right, 513-419-7100 is the number to call if you want to join the gardening show live here on Cincinnati Edition. Let's go now to Anne. Hi, Anne. What's your question or comment?
Yes, I have wonderful squash and cucumbers, and I'm fighting the cucumber beetle. I've used an alternating treatment of neem oil spray and dusting powder with 7. Is there a season at which they stop, and will they come back next year? Can you fill me in on the cucumber beetle?
Thank you for the call, Anne. We really appreciate it. We'll hang up and let our experts take a chance at this one. David, can you help Anne with her cucumber beetle problem?
Well, first of all, you're going to see them from now on, I'm afraid. And every year, they will be out in abundance. And once they've found a garden site, they will come back. I have had great luck with the 7 dust. That's a synthetic product. And also there is a product with spinosad dust in it. It is available at the discount stores. And I guess I can give the name. It's Captain Jack's Dead Bug. And it is really it has spinosad in it, which is a organic treatment, and it's pretty effective against the squash vine borer as well as the cucumber beetle. And I'm afraid that as long as you've got them in the ground, you are going to see those pests. And I find the dust works better along the vine. It's not, you know, they're doing damage on the vine, not on the foliage. So you need to get the dust beneath the foliage.
And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. It's our monthly gardening show where we take your calls and your emails and your social media comments. We're joined by local gardening and landscaping and pest experts, Campbell County Extension Office agent Sarah Stoles. Hi, Sarah.
Howdy.
And Boone County Extension Office agent David Kester. David, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
All right, 513-419-7100 is the number to call. You can email talk at wvxu.org to join our conversation. Sarah, we got an email from Danny who says, I was listening to Cincinnati Edition today and heard a question about chiggers. One of the guests said that they had a publication on how to deal with them. Is there a link to that publication? Any help would be great. Thank you. Sarah, I think that was you.
Yeah, so I mean, do you want me to announce that over here, or I can, if that's
is there a link that we could, I could forward this email directly to you right now from this very studio in real time, and you can
send
that to Danny.
Yes.
All right, it's on the way.
This is a good thing about working virtually, but I do miss your face.
Danny, be on the lookout for that email. Sarah, we miss your face too. Let's get back to the phone calls now. We have Lana on the line. Hi, Lana. What's your question or comment?
Hi. So I have some tomato plants that some are in a raised bed and some are in pots. And in both instances, some of the leaves on some of the plants have gone really yellow, like a lot of the leaves. And on others, they've all shriveled up and look like they're dead, like they've totally dried out. I'm wondering, what am I doing wrong and how can I bring them back? But I do like everything is organic, so I don't want chemicals if possible.
Okay, so Lana, to clarify, you've got these tomato plants. Some of the leaves have gone yellow and then some of them have dried up like they haven't been watered?
Yes, but it seems like every plant is something has happened to, none of them look still healthy.
Okay. And where are they planted on your property?
I
guess in relation to sun and all that?
Yes, no, they do get a lot of sun.
Okay, cool.
They get a lot of sun.
Well, Lana, we'll hang up and we'll let our experts take a chance on this one. David, can you help Lana with her tomato plant problem? Sounds like they're drying up.
I think so. I don't know that they're drying up. I'm sure you're probably, you know that when a tomato plant is grown in a pot, it needs an extensive amount of water. And sometimes on a hot, windy day, when they get a lot of foliage up there, that can mean watering twice a day. Now, I think what your tomato plants have is a disease called early blight, which begins on the lower foliage. It's a fungal disease, and it starts on the lower foliage, and then it moves up the plant, and it turns the foliage a little bit yellow. And then they get a kind of a bullseye ring spot, and the foliage dries up. And it's very prevalent this year because of the moisture that we've had. We're just seeing it on just a lot of plants, commercial as well as homeowner garden spots. Everybody seems to have early blight. And as far as an organic solution is, probably the copper fungicides are the best answer. And it's almost better with this disease that you do it preventatively. It will slow it down once it's gotten established, but you want to kind of put some of the copper on there as a preventative measure and then maybe to treat it a couple times thereafter.
All right, 513-419-7100 is the number to join our conversation. Let's go over to Dale now. Hi, Dale. What's your question or comment?
Hi there. Well, that's similar to what the lady was just talking about, except I have white flies on my tomato plants that are in pots on my patio, and they're mixed in with all my house plants that are out for summer vacation. And I don't want to spray the tomatoes for the white flies, but I'm wondering where the predatory insects all are.
Okay, Dale.
We have had white flies before, but they've never been this much.
Oh, so you think that they were taken care of naturally before, and now you're wondering where the hunters are. Okay.
In fact, in the fall, when I used to spray the plants before I took them back into the greenhouse, I would have more white flies than if I didn't spray. So I stopped spraying, and I brought in the good insects with the bad ones.
All right, Dale, thank you so much for listening. We'll hang up and let our experts take a chance on this one. Sarah, how do we help Dale with his white flies so he doesn't throw up the white flag?
So if I'm understanding, the white flies are on the house plants, but the house plants are intermingled with the tomato plants, all of which are on summer vacation in containers. You think that's what I gathered?
That's what it sounded like. But he said he was even having a problem in the greenhouse.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you can use like a horticulture soap if you would like. It may be in your soil because they like to thrive in your soil. So if it's been a while, especially for your house plants, if you haven't, you maybe repotted or used new fresh potting mix, that might be something. But I've never really seen it be a nuisance on the tomatoes, the white flies that you find on your house plants. I would also make sure that they're not too close together. You may want to, you know, a pod or two that has a lot of whiteflies, make sure that you put those in a separate area than the other plants, and give them some air and get them some light. That's all that I can really think of, to be honest.
Hope that was helpful for you. Good luck with the whitefly problem. 513-419-7100 is the number to join our gardening show. And we have Todd up next. Hi, Todd. What's your question or comment?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering, I planted some acorn squash. I'm wondering too early. I would say that they started blooming maybe a month and a half, about 2 months ago. And they were doing awesome. They were flowering, and I was amazed. I'm still amazed that you can put seeds in the ground and put water on them, and they still grow, even though I'm human. but I'm wondering if I planted them too early, and they've just gotten scorched. I mean, we've had some rain, and I definitely water them when I think that they're dry. But I'm wondering, did I plant them too early? I'm confused. I'll plant them again. I have extra seeds, and it's mostly for enjoyment, just to see that I can, you know, make fire, you know.
I love that, Todd. I'm glad that you're throwing back to the caveman roots that we all share. I appreciate that. Thanks for the call. We'll hang up and let our expert panel take a chance on this one. David, did Todd plant his squash too early? What's the best time for that?
We call it winter squash, and the reason is because it has a hard rind, and traditionally it will store going into the winter. So you want to, I always like to plant my winter squash late, and then, you know, and harvest maybe in September, and then it'll store well until maybe January or so. You didn't do anything wrong. It's just that you need to be harvesting that squash now. And just because it says it's winter squash doesn't mean you can't enjoy it in the middle of the summer. And I think your squash is probably ready to be harvested, some of it. And you can certainly plant. And that's another thing. We still have plenty of time to get squash in the ground, to get cucumbers in the ground, and to get beans in the ground for a harvest way before frost. So I would continue gardening with some of the summer crops still.
So Todd, go ahead and build that fire and then fry up some of that squash after you harvest it. Good luck to you out there. Thanks for the advice, David. 513-419-7100 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation live. You can also email your questions or comments to talk@wvxu.org. This is Cincinnati Edition's monthly gardening show. Let's go to the phones again. We've got Chloe on the line. Hi, Chloe. What's your question or comment?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Our pleasure. What's on your mind?
I was given 10 different varietals of hostas, and they arrived via UPS in the beginning of this month. So not ideal weather-wise. It's very hot. It's been very hot for the majority of their time. And I'm used to watering plants when I see that they need it, and then seeing that they have a regrowth, and suddenly the leaves look healthier and they're not hanging there. And the hostas don't give me that same kind of feedback. After I water them, I don't notice much of a perk. They're still in their small containers that they arrived in because I want them to flourish a bit before I put them in the ground. And I'm wondering, but they have had stagnation in growth. I haven't seen any growth in the 3 weeks since I've gotten them. And I was wondering if you guys have any advice.
Okay, Chloe, thanks for the call. And just in case there's any further questions about this one, I'll place you on hold. Sarah, can you help Chloe?
All right. So that was a lot of information. I hope that I gathered everything. So nursery containers, you have them in there, you've been watering. I hope that you've placed them in dampened sun. You don't want them in full sun. And I wouldn't be too, scared if there's not much foliage growth. You really want to make sure that there's a lot of good root structure forming. So you may want to just lift up one of the plants and just see how that's going. Also smell the soil, making sure that they're not rotting. Feel the roots, make sure that they're, not wet, too wet, because that could be, decay. I would avoid any type of fertilization at this time. And I wouldn't be, I mean, 3 weeks is not too, you know, I wouldn't be, I guess, upset. I would just kind of a little bit more patience. And then ideally you would want to, you don't want to transplant them at this time. It's way too hot. So if you want to, you know, ideally, if you could wait till spring, if there's a place that you could overwinter them, that would be great. If you want to do that in the fall and then protect them with some good mulch, you know, leaves clippings or anything that you may have in your landscape that help protect them a little better. But I wouldn't be too upset right now that they haven't shown much foliage.
Chloe, does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's great. Is there any benefit to putting them in larger pots?
Not right now. It's, you know, you really want them to, making sure that you have good soil. We always emphasize having good soil, making sure that the container that they're growing in also has drainage. So a lot of times these nursery containers, you know, they're black, they get hot, they do have drainage. So just making sure that you have those components there. Putting it in larger container, you know, if they don't have good root structure, they're not going to be able to absorb the nutrients there, and that could actually be harmful to the plant. So you don't want to have the environment too large for the root structure there. So if you would like, you're welcome to send me some pictures of your plants, and, you know, send it to me, because sometimes a visual is way better than a description. So feel free to do that.
And there you go, Chloe. You can find Sarah at the Campbell County Extension Office. Just Google that and the website will come up with Sarah's information. Chloe, thank you so much for the phone call. 513-419-7100 is the number to call if you want to join the conversation. We're joined by Sarah Stoles from the Campbell County Extension Office and David Kester from the Boone County Extension Office. We got a call from Nancy, who left us a message, and she would like you all to talk about something that I've never said out loud before. I don't even know if I've read this word before, so I've got dictionary.com up to try to give me a pronouncer. I'm sure you know it. Is it diatomaceous earth?
Diatomaceous.
Diatomaceous. Diatomaceous. Is that right? Diatomaceous earth?
Yes. Yes. You got it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's all I wanted was some validation. Should we take a commercial break? No. Go ahead, David. She wants to know about what its benefits might be.
Well, it's an insecticide or a mollicide, and what it does, it's finely ground seashells, little diatoms is what it is, and they actually will puncture the exoskeleton of an insect or and they use them for, and hostas for slugs and things like that. If the slug crawls across the diatomaceous earth, it'll put holes in its exoskeleton, and they will just kind of dry up and die.
Diatomaceous earth.
And it is an organic product, so it will not work on everything, but it on the label, it's very good against slugs around hostas and things like that.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. The phone lines are lighting up. We've got a ton of emails to get to, so we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to have to do the lightning round. So if you're waiting for us to take your phone call, we'll have to get that question out quickly. Before we run out of time this hour, you are listening to the Monthly Gardening Show on Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. It's our monthly gardening show. We've got about 10 minutes left, and phone calls and emails are piling up. I want to get through all of them if possible. So Sarah and David, let's give our best quick, fast-paced answers. And to our callers, let's give our best fast-paced questions. We'll go to Laura now on the phone. Hi, Laura. What's your question?
Hi, thank you. I'm just wondering why I can't seem to grow lavender successfully. I've killed two small lavender shrubs this year, and I'm wondering what I'm doing wrong.
Okay, Laura, we'll hang up and we'll let our guest take a chance on this one to give you some advice on how to grow lavender. Thanks for the call. Sarah, lavender problems here.
Definitely need well-drained soil. So in our clay soils here, we want to make sure that we prep the soil for that. And making sure that you have hardy varieties that are in this area. So again, well-drained soil and variety selection.
Okay, well-drained soil, variety selection will help you with that lavender situation. Let's go now to Bill. Hi, Bill. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, hey, I've got a couple mounds of acorn squash and a couple mounds of zucchini squash with lots and lots of foliage, lots of flowers, but they're not producing any fruit or any squash. And I'm wondering if I should self-pollinate them or if there's something else. Looking for some recommendations.
All right, Bill, thanks so much for the call. David, can you help Bill with this? He's got...
Well, Bill, you can be the bee if you want to and take a Q-tip out and go to the male flowers and get some pollen and move that around. I think you're going to see flower. I think you're going to see fruit coming on here real soon. A lot of times the first flowers that come on a squash or zucchini plant are male, and they, of course, are not going to produce fruit. So you'll see the flowers and you'll think, why am I not getting fruit? But the secondary flowers will be female and you will get fruit. And I think, you know, as long as you are seeing bees active in your plants, I wouldn't worry about it. You're going to have fruit.
Good luck, Bill. Appreciate the call very much. Let's go now to Tina. Hi, Tina. What's your question or comment?
Yes, hello. We are experiencing a problem with our tomatoes this year. Last year, we didn't have any trouble at all. But this year, we started them from seeds inside, and they grew to be, I don't know, a couple, 3-4 inches tall. And then we planted them, and they grew to, the plants are actually, some of them, up to 3 foot tall and bushy. And tomatoes have come out. They're very small tomatoes, and they're green, but nothing. It's just like they've halted. They aren't growing anymore, and they're not turning red. I just wondered if anybody else is experiencing this, if we need to do something different. I know we use Epsom salt on them a few times and some Miracle-Gro. So
okay, Tina, let's see if Sarah can help you out with this one.
So tomatoes not fruiting. So a lot of times I get this question when people have been adding a lot of fertilizer, especially nitrogen fertilizer, which is that first number in the 3-digit fertilizer ratio. So at this time, we don't need to add any further nitrogen fertilizer. So the last two numbers are what we need for good root development and flower and fruit production. Making sure you keep up with the watering. I'm not sure if they were in containers or grown in the ground, but keep up with that. Disease pressure, again, not really understanding what it's actually, what it looks like. Feel free to send me pictures, and we can help diagnose that way.
Again, Tina, you can look up Sarah or David on the Campbell County Extension Office website or the Boone County Extension Office website, and do send their pictures. They're very good at getting back to you and offering you further advice on how to deal with this. Tina, thanks for listening, and thank you so much for the phone call. We've got about 5 minutes left. I got a pile of emails. Let's blow through these. We got one from Emma. She says, I have recently built a greenhouse in my backyard, so I'm new to planting inside the greenhouse. I'm having trouble with my zucchini in the greenhouse as they are growing extremely large but producing no zucchini. I read that pollination is needed. However, there are pollinators that I see in the greenhouse. What is something else I can plant late in the summer that will grow to replace the zucchini? David.
Boy, you know, I don't know that I would be growing zucchini in a greenhouse in the middle of the summer here in the Ohio Valley. It's you could probably, you know, when it starts to get cooler, you could get any number of crops in there. And, of course, even tomatoes would go into November, December or so in a greenhouse. But, you know, I really wonder about the pollination and whether they're getting pollinated. Mm-hmm. And again, give them some time. I think, again, that maybe those first flowers are not the female flowers, which will produce the fruit.
Good luck with that one. We got an email from Morgan. Planted a hat trick apple tree 3 years ago. It hasn't produced any apples yet. I trained the horizontal branches on plastic wire between posts. I pruned it very heavily in the winter, but it now has many vertical shoots about 18 inches tall, but no blossoms or apples. Any suggestions? Sarah, can you help Morgan with her hat trick apple tree?
I might have to refer this to David. He's more of the fruit tree. David?
Yeah. Well, your tree is still very young, and it may not have flowered this year. And you're getting a lot of shoots, which obviously the tree is healthy. It's growing. I would just, give it another year. And you're not going to get it. You don't want any flowers on it now at this time of year. And just we did have some very cold temperatures in May again, and that tree may have been at a very vulnerable stage at that time, and it may have killed the flowers that were on the plant at that time. So I wouldn't worry about it. I think you're going to get the tree should be fine. Just remember that growing fruit, especially apples and some of the pears and peaches in this climate, which is high humidity, requires a lot of pesticide usage, either organic or synthetic. But you will have to give it some time. Make sure you prune it properly. Come to a pruning demonstration if you can. And I think your tree will be fine. I'm not really familiar with a hat trick variety of apple, though.
Okay, we've just got a couple minutes left and still have a pile of emails. So Kathy writes, we have 10 acres in Bracken County. It's hilly, and over the years, we have noticed a lot of erosion. Any recommendations on anything to plant on the hillside to slow erosion? She says, I've been thinking of seagrass. Sarah or David, who'd be best at that?
Vetch is a good one. Clover, depending upon your sun exposure, but we have tons of information about that. You can use different mix of different grasses, wildflowers, trees, perennials. David?
Yeah, your Naturalization and Resource and Conservation Service, you have 10 acres. They would probably be happy to be involved in that. And if it's eroding, they will be sure to be involved in it, and they will want you to correct that. So I would reach out to them. And any kind of permanent pasture, you can do a lot of different things with that. But keeping it covered with plants is your best option.
Paula writes, I have a small garden planted directly in the ground and wish our kale, I believe, is this pak choi? Beans and other greens that have been overtaken by small caterpillars and some small black pests that eat away the leaves. What are your solutions? Sounds like a pest question, Sarah.
Oh, man. I mean, there are different tactics. Understanding which insect and understanding their life cycle, maybe using a chemical control with a combination of maybe even using row covers. So, again, a lot of times it's just, and integrating beneficial insects. So with our particular question, Michael, I guess I was a little confused. I guess it's just pest management?
It's what it sounds like. I think, what are the suggestions for the small vegetable garden?
Yeah.
And so the answer is usually blowtorch, right?
You can always go back to that.
Yeah, blowtorch. Really not for those who, that's just an inside joke. Insecticidal soap's always a good one. If you want to do a synthetic carboxyl or 7, either the liquid or the powder. But again, we really have to understand what insect it is, because the mode of action of a particular insect varies. So send me pictures. We'll figure it out.
Yeah. And again, go ahead, David.
The BT, Bacillus thuringiensis, should work on the caterpillars.
Okay. Again, you can find Sarah Stolz at the Campbell County Extension Office. Just Google that. We've got a link at WVXU.org. Inside the Cincinnati Edition tab, you'll also find information for our good friend David Kester at the Boone County Extension Office. They're both ready and willing to help. So we are out of time. I still have a pile of emails. I'm going to forward these emails to you all, if you would be kind enough, over the next few days when we have some time. It's because we're so grateful for people listening and participating in the show. It's always our busiest one. So if you didn't get your email on air, we're going to forward it to these guys, and hopefully they can help you out. Sarah, David, good to hear from both of you. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
Happy gardening. See ya.
See you later. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Our technical director is Josh Elstro. and I'm Michael Muggs. Talk to you tomorrow.